A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Chakra Way Meditation Podcast. And today I'm joined by Dr. Joy Bracey, who is a licensed professional counselor, a nonprofit CEO, and the host of the Easy Way Out podcast. Now, the clue of what we're going to talk about today really is in the title of her podcast, The Easy Way Out, and it's W-E-I-G-H, that kind of way, the Way Out podcast. Because Dr. Joy Bracey is a specialist in addiction, in obesity, weight loss, self-love, all of these things that I think really resonate with a lot of us. And even if addiction or weight loss isn't something that is on the top of your list, self-love certainly should be. And so I am welcoming Dr. Joy with great joy. Thank you so much for joining me. God, I bet nobody's ever said that to you before, have they?
I love it though. I love it. I love it every time.
apologies. So thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Joy. Tell me a little bit about your journey. When did you become a counselor? When did you start this kind of work that you're doing now?
Really, I started training for everything that I'm doing now when I was probably about, 2 or 3 years old. We are who we are, and I'm a natural helper. I am a natural teacher. I am helped by helping, and I learn by teaching. And so I've been doing these things my whole life. I became a licensed professional counselor maybe about 15 years ago. I got my master's degree much longer ago than that. And I've been working in the addiction field for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. Now I also teach self-awareness and self-love and mindfulness to master's degree students. So that's a very exciting thing to add this spiritual, part to my mind-body connection. It's been pretty wonderful.
That's a wonderful mixture of qualifications and things that you've got there. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because as soon as you say you deal with addiction, one instantly goes to alcohol and drugs, right? And then gambling, I suppose. But tell me about your story of addiction and how that unfolded for you.
Yeah. So I think the thing that I like to start with is that these things, first of all, addiction, period, of any kind, is a genetic, you have a genetic predisposition. Like alcoholism, addiction is a genetic brain disease that is chronic, relapsing, and that can be treated. So I just want to start with that. And we have to remove the shame from these words. This is a medical issue, and our emotions get wrapped up in it. And it's so powerful for us because it messes with our reward system. So when I was a kid, I grew up in a home with addiction, and there was no space for me to have any so-called bad feelings. I was not allowed to be frustrated, angry, upset, hurt. I was never allowed to have my feelings hurt. Oh my gosh, that was like totally intolerable to the adults. And so I was a little kid, 4 or 5 years old, and had to figure out a way to move forward without expressing any feelings that were bad. And the only thing I had access to for dopamine to help release those feelings and relax my nervous system was food. And I was an athlete and an overachiever, trying to be perfect so that the adults around me would love me and behave the way that they should, which is very common. Kids think everything is their fault. Everything is about them. And so I thought I could control my life and the adults around me by being perfect. And I wasn't an overweight kid, although I was a food addicted by the time I started school. My fifth birthday was my golden birthday. There was no party, no friends, no gifts, nothing. My dad picked me up from school with a flower and a double pack of those Hostess cupcakes, you know, with the white swirly lines on top.
Yeah.
And that was my present. And I didn't have to share one with my brother. Like, I got to eat both. And it's, believe it or not, like, as sad as that sounds, it's like such a happy memory. For me, by 5 years old, food was love. That's what I had. And so 2 chocolate cupcakes that I didn't have to share was like gold for me. So then my whole personality is formed around this. My coping mechanisms, my brain is then wired to give me that relaxation, that dopamine hit, all the feel goods from sugar and carbohydrates. And it then denies, also this is the way addiction works with drugs and alcohol and other things that people get addicted to, gambling, sex, shopping, all of that. It starts to deny the dopamine and that relaxation from the healthy things that we should get it from, like completing a task or hugging your baby or, you know, playing with your puppy. Those are all things that should get us through a normal day. But when your brain is addicted and wired for addiction, it starts to deny the dopamine in those areas. So for me, this is a lifelong battle, and I've lost and gained a gajillion pounds, more than you weigh, over my lifetime. And I'd given up. I had completely sworn off weight loss after I had lost 80 pounds and gained like 120. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm never doing this to myself again. I love myself. I am going to embrace my curves. I love my body, and that's it. And I really did, really all in on that. And then I hit about 47 years old, and I felt like the time was ticking when some really bad consequences were about to kick in. I was losing mobility. I was stopping breathing 80 times an hour because of sleep apnea. My feet were hurting all the time. There was just bad, like cholesterol medication, diabetes was on the horizon. Like, all of these things were starting to happen. And so then I had to get honest with myself as a part of my self-love practice, being honest about those consequences and deciding, how do you reconcile loving yourself as you are, but making a drastic change? Make this change because I've tried everything. And so that's why I did the podcast. I felt like people need these answers and want these answers and deserve these answers in this conversation. And so here we are now. I've lost 165 pounds and counting. And I just want to spread the word that it's possible and, you know, give people some answers and choices.
That's such an interesting journey that is mind-blowing. So obviously my first question is, well, how did you end up losing 165 pounds? Because that's a lot of weight.
Yes, I halved my body weight. The thing is, so I lost 100 pounds with the help of these new, well, they're really not that new, but now they're newly extremely popular GLP-1 medications. The name of mine was Mounjaro, in case anyone cares. And it turns off that food noise. It regulates the hormones and that reward system that I was talking about earlier, so that you have the freedom to choose for yourself. What does my body really want? What is good for me and healthy for me right now? Because when you are in active food addiction, when your brain is wired this way, there's so much chatter in there about, well, what am I going to eat next? How am I going to give, how many cookies can I have? And how can I eat 3 cookies without somebody noticing? And if I'm at a wedding, when are they going to cut the cake? And what am I going to have for dinner tonight? Oh, I could maybe have this for breakfast tomorrow. And what about those things that are in the freezer? I mean, it's nonstop, and it makes it nearly irresistible to just give in, because it takes so much energy and power to resist. It's like white knuckling. So I use those medications, which were a tremendous relief, and for a host of factors that are too.
What do the medications actually do? Do they? Because they must be, you know, those those thoughts, that wiring that you're talking about of your brain, which is literally just like all it can think about is the next hit. So it's the same for alcoholics or drug addicts. It's like, when and how is the next fix? And food, it's easy because like everybody needs food. It's like, but you're switching off that. I mean, it almost feels too simple. It almost feels too easy that they've developed a drug that just switches off that part of your brain. And I'm always mystified because there must have be some other side effects, or it must have messed with your hormones. I don't know. I mean, what do you know? Just out of interest, because I'm
And I'm absolutely happy to share. So first of all, I just want to say these medications, I don't want to like to convince anyone to take any medications, but I will say, as an addiction professional in this field for 20 years, I am so excited about these medications because I felt for firsthand what they do for the brain. And
the same as that weight loss drug that everyone talks about, is it called Ozempic or something like that? Or is it different?
Yes, it's got additional effective parts. So Ozempic was like the first one, and then Mounjaro came next. It's semaglutide and then tirzepatide is the one that I took. These medications, they're actually being tested right now for people with alcoholism, because what they originally developed this drug, what they did was they backpedaled the effects of bariatric surgery. They found what's happening in the brain and with the hormones that regulate hunger and fullness, which get totally out of whack when you're obese. Then they recreated that with the medication to treat diabetes. It slows down digestion. It regulates the hunger and fullness hormones and the reward hormones so that you can make better choices for yourself and eat normal amounts of food without feeling deprived. And then they found people were losing weight, and then people were taking it for weight loss. And then people who were taking it for weight loss, who also had a drinking issue, started to notice they didn't drink as much. They didn't want as much to drink. Yes. I personally know someone who was alcohol dependent, who was able to stop drinking because of Mounjaro. So the possibilities, I am telling you, people who have messed up their lives with alcohol and other drugs, gambling, shopping, sex addiction, compulsive behaviors of all kinds, this medication gives me so much hope. And finally, there's a dollar bill that motivates pharmaceutical companies to fix this for real, because in the past, they've been really motivated. You know, all of the financial industries are motivated by us being overweight. We buy more food, we buy more clothes, we take up more space. Just in general, it's better for the bottom line for us to be sick and obese for our leaders and our, you know, billionaires. Yes. But now, if everyone is paying top dollar for this medication, and in the United States, we pay way more than other countries do. Those are a whole nother topics for other shows, but it's very exciting. And it regulates the hormones. I'm not an expert. I have been explained it and I've felt it personally, but I'm not like an expert at how the medication works, but it regulates the ghrelin and the hormones that control how hungry you feel.
It's so fascinating because, I mean, normally I'm normally, my kind of default position on Western medicine is, yes, it's completely fantastic. Like, you need it. Of course you do. But taking drugs, putting things into your body when you don't necessarily need them, like the number of times that I've seen people who have been poorly with something that's not critical, they go into hospital and they start getting treatment and everything just spirals into an absolute hellscape of disaster. And, you know, whenever I'm, you know, I try to stay away from the doctor as much as I possibly can. I try not to take any pills. I mean, not that they want me to take any pills, but that's always been my general feeling. But every so often there is a really important drug, you know, I mean, let's not forget antibiotics and penicillin.
Right. We need some of them.
Change the course of humanity, frankly. So, you know. Of course, there is a place for medical Western medicine, but this is a really interesting thing, that because the other side of weight loss is, you know, the interventionist Western medicine intervention is surgery, And that always scares the bejesus out of me. I always think
that's... I did that too.
Did you?
Yeah, so I lost 100 pounds and then I had an 11 months, which is a good pace. It's a healthy pace. And then I had gastric bypass surgery and I've lost 65 additional pounds since that. So about 10 pounds a month for the past 16 months. Because the medication, here's the thing, there are limits. I had a lot of weight to lose. Mm-hmm. And that medication loses its effectiveness at lower doses. You know, you have to keep going up and up and up. And the max dose is 15 milligrams every week. And I was hitting that. And then I started to have adverse reactions to the medication, which the surgery really was helpful because I believe that, and this is going to be one of those, I think, change course of humanity drugs. I really do. At least the direction that this is going in, because our society has become so sick with dependence. Yeah. You know, our reward systems are completely out of whack. We are not able to tolerate any sort of discomfort. If I decide that I, you know, need a pink cup, I can order it on Amazon and have it here tomorrow. I don't have to wait for anything. Anything I want is literally at the fingertips ready. There's a medicine for everything. We don't even know how to sit in discomfort.
Yeah.
And
too cold. We don't want to be too hot. We don't want to be, yeah, there's, you're absolutely right. And because our brains are not as developed as our society, if you see what I mean, you know, historically, that danger, that need, you know, that all of those primal things that come up for us that need to be satisfied, as in finding something to be afraid of or something to be fearful of or something to satisfy and calm. Yeah, I don't agree with you. So you have done this incredible journey with weight loss, which is what your podcast, The Easy Way Out, chronicles, which I think is a really interesting listen for anybody who is, you know, wanting to explore that journey. So, you know, on the face of it, someone will go, so Roseanne, why are you talking to Dr. Joy? Because, you know, you're about spirituality and, you know, energy healing and chakras and all that kind of stuff. So where's that? So far we're talking about drugs and
right.
The next thing is like, well, where does that come in for you? Because you were obviously, you know, I wouldn't have reached out for you. I wouldn't have connected with you if I didn't think that this was part of your journey. So when does this kind of spirituality come into this journey for you and how does it show up?
Well, I have always been spiritually in tune, or I've had a very strong sense of intuition. When I was that 5-year-old little girl who wasn't getting the kind of life that her friends were having, and I thought things aren't great, you know, I always knew that I was protected. I always felt a sense of purpose in this life, that there was something more for me, that my suffering would come to a close and that I would be on the other side of it with something to offer the world. And I'm going to get emotional thinking about my little self in whatever words she had thinking that, but I did. But, you know, as mentioned before, the circumstances were difficult and perfectionism and people pleasing ruled me. And I was an overachiever. I was doing, going at the speed of light, getting this degree, doing that, achieving this, achieving that, pleasing everyone. And I hit the end of my 40s or nearing the end of my 40s. And I was like, the sense of peace, the sense of accomplishment and satisfaction with life that I thought was going to be here was not at the end of this perfection rainbow. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the consequences of my obesity were hitting. And I'm just feeling like this is not it. This is not what I've been working for my whole life. And I have been wanting meditation, mindfulness, all of this to be a part of my life for so long, but the stillness was excruciating. I would try to meditate and feel absolutely like I was going to jump out of my skin. And I think a lot of people relate to that. Like, it's absolutely intolerable because the stillness means you have to meet yourself. And yeah, you can't be still and not like yourself. You can't be still and be more concerned with what other people think of you than your own sense of peace. And so these things were all in conflict and everything was a jumbled mess. And I would say the first thing that kicked off my transformation of all of it, mind, body, and spirit, was that I felt called to host a women's retreat. And so I started talking to friends, women around me, and saying, what would I even teach? I don't even know. I'm supposed to do this, but I don't even know what I would talk about. Like, what do I have to teach anybody at 337 pounds and can't even do a meditation and feel comfortable? And everyone started talking about the inner critic. I was like, okay, that seems great. I can handle that. Mine is fine. I don't have that, you know? So then I started researching, you know, like an overachiever might do. And I started looking into the inner critic and realized that mine was beating me up all the time, that I was ruled by.
You did have an inner critic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was mean. Her favorite thing to say to me was, who do you think you are? Because, you know, now on the other side of this, and really it's a continual process. You never finish. You never arrive at peace. You never arrive at fitness. All this is a continual journey. But on the other side of the hardest part, I can say that, you know, my ego was so afraid to be bright and beautiful and happy and peaceful and for my light to shine. It really needed me to be small to feel safe, because that's all it knew. It was just so afraid of this unknown brightness that might lie ahead if I harness some sort of peace and confidence. And that's what's happening in all of us. Our inner critics are keeping us small and afraid, because change is really scary to that animal brain of ours. And so once I developed the tools to heal the inner critic and started doing that, then I thought, oh my God, like actually I didn't love myself at all, because self-love then came in. And it's like, this opened the door. This was my doorway to self-love. Like once I quieted that chatter, and at the same time, I'm taking this medication that freed me from the shame about my body. Because if you can take a medication that turns off all that food noise, then how's that like my fault? That's not because I'm a bad person. That's yeah. got to be a biological thing. Mm-hmm. So then at the same time, I'm shedding all of that. I'm able to develop self-love. And then once I started a self-love practice, then the mindfulness and the earth-shattering amazingness that is discovering my own light has settled in, and it's settling in more every day. And I don't think that I could be at this place of peace that I'm at right now spiritually if I was still neglecting my body. If my body was this burden that I didn't like, or that I wasn't taking care of, that how could I be at peace and one with myself? Or like emotionally, if I wasn't taking care of myself and learning who I am and what I need and being able to express it and put boundaries in relationships, they all have to kind of work together. And for me, that was the magical thing. They were all happening at the same time. And that's not an accident, I suppose.
Absolutely not. So you're so right. All of those things do go hand in hand, and it's like a domino effect. And when one starts, it just kind of, it's like a peacock's tail opening. It's like, there it is, the whole picture. Self-love is one of these things. And those who listen to me regularly will have heard me say this a million times before. When I do a chakra reading, one of the things that I always read in within the heart is the levels of self-love. You know, there's lots of aspects to each of our energy centers within our body. But self-love, without self-love, it's very hard to energize the heart chakra to accept love, even, you know, because if you don't love yourself, you don't think you're worthy of love. So now you teach self-love. I mean, when I'm doing a reading, when I'm talking to somebody, I will always kind of tailor it to them, because it's sort of intuitive and you kind of got to work with what's going to work for the individual. That's so true. When you teach self-love, what are your tools? What are you teaching? Give us some top tips here, because this is like a really big meaty chunk in the stew of life.
Oh, yeah. It's the whole stew.
It is the
host. It really is. Yeah, it is. We are love. Life is about love. We have to give it to ourselves first, and then we can freely give it to everyone. It's amazing. Yeah, exactly. Love is where it's at.
Love is where it's at. Love is the only thing, and that is the thing that's out there, and that we just need to tap into. We just need to connect to that frequency of love. And it's so abundant when you find it, and it's so infinite as well. That's the other wonderful thing about love. So, but how do you teach someone, somebody who's mired in a bog of shame and unworthiness and not enoughness and all of those things that we, that society gives us, that our, you know, upbringing gave us, that school maybe gave us, maybe our boss gave us, like whatever, wherever it came from, it didn't come from us. It was given to us at some point, and we took it on board thinking we can carry this, it's okay, or not even knowing we were carrying it. So how do we start to unburden ourselves and really just dive headfirst into self-love?
Sure. That's such a great question and such an important one. Probably the most important thing I could say in my whole life is what I'm about to say next. And that is, I would tell people to start tuning into their thoughts. When you are doing, like I was, moving at the speed of light, overachieving, people-pleasing, perfectionism, or if you're a person who's like, screw it, screw the world and their expectations, I'm just going to drink this, or I'm just going to do my own thing and I don't need anybody. People adapt in all sorts of ways as children, right? To all of these external forces that you just mentioned and others. And either way, the thoughts that you're telling yourself are actually the doorways, the keys to your healing. So we are ignoring those. What we are doing is running from those when we are using any substances, when we are, you know, denying our needs, turning our back on ourselves. We are just running from the thoughts. Instead of, it's totally counterintuitive to stand, turn around, and face the thought. So, for example, when I tuned into my inner critic and heard it say, "Who do you think you are?" I was like, gosh, like, have I really been saying that to myself? Like, that's powerful. Those are powerful, terrible words that I've been coping with all this time. And why do I think that? So to really just listen, that's the first step and the most important step and the scariest one.
Yeah.
And then once you start, I have a couple of quick tools for combating this inner critic. Number one, be your best friend. So when your inner critic tells you something like, why do you think you can do that? No one wants to hear you talk, or you're so stupid, or whatever it is that it's saying, picture your best friend's voice. I know you have it right there in your mind, and let her talk back to it. Mm-hmm. Like, what? Don't say that to her. You know, whatever the conversation would look like, just imagine it all the way through till the end, till your best friend wins the argument. That's one of my favorite things. And you could send in a team of friends too. It doesn't have to just be one. Sometimes the thoughts are so big, they need a team. Yeah. Another thing is to challenge them. A lot of times our inner critic is really ridiculous. Like, well, nobody thinks that, or everyone hates you, or everyone thinks you're incompetent, or whatever. Does really everyone think that? Everyone thinks that. Because really what we know is that people aren't thinking about us, right? That, like, we might be perseverating on something we said 3 days ago. The person heard it, didn't even process it, and kept moving. Like, they are not thinking about us. Mm-hmm. So we have to really challenge those thoughts with facts. And then the last quick tip I'll give on that is that I always say, and this is really important, we are not our thoughts and our thoughts are not facts. So I am not the thoughts in my head. I always associated with myself. Like, we think that's who we are, our intelligence, our memories, all of this, the thinking is who we identify with as ourselves. But if you have any kind of spiritual base to start from, you know, that's not true. You are the light, you are love, you are your soul. However you're spiritually oriented, that is true, that our thoughts are not who we are. So just because I think, who do you think you are, doesn't make it true. And it is not who I am. That's just an animal thought that's produced by an organ in my body. It works like a liver or a kidney. I mean, it's just an organ doing its job, and it just likes to be busy, likes to keep us busy. Yeah. So those are the things to stop that inner critic. And then the self-love piece, the simple way to say that is it's a practice. You have to figure out, what is it you want that you haven't been getting? Like, I love to meal prep for myself. That's like an act of love. I buy myself flowers. You know, I light candles. Those are fun things. But also emotionally, like, I don't turn my back on myself. If someone is hurtful to me, I don't keep allowing them into my life, trying to fix them and change them and hoping they'll one day do right by me. Because now I love myself. And I'm like, oh no. I love you, and I'm going to send you off with love to heal that on your own, not on at the expense of my peace. Yeah. So that's a lot. There's a lot more, but those are some of the basics.
No, it's a lot, you know, but that, in all honesty, you know, that work of just reminding ourselves that just because we thought it doesn't mean that it's true. And that can be a bit of a mind bender. That can be a bit of a difficult one to process. So you have a thought that says, I'm not good enough to do whatever, or I'm really ashamed that I said or did something. I don't know, whatever it is. You've got this thought that's making you feel uncomfortable, and it's making everything feel, and you go, well, I've had that thought and I'm having this feeling. And so, you know, it must be true because it certainly feels true. Like, you know, my face is red, I'm feeling awful, I'm, you know, full of this emotion of embarrassment or shame or, you know, self-loathing, whatever it is. To turn to yourself, which is what you're going to do, and go, actually, that's not the case. And then convince yourself of that. Now that is work. That is really hard work. But I think as soon as you have the awareness that that is a possibility, that that is potential, then that's when the work can actually begin and you can have that conversation. I've asked this question of so many people when I talk to, and it's a theme that comes up time and time again. And I just never get tired of talking about it, which is, you know, how do you know the difference between your ego that's telling you all this rubbish and your higher self, you know, your true self, your so what's your kind of answer or idea about that?
Well, oh gosh, you said so many wonderful things in there. I just love it. I love it, love it. So the first thing is, I just want to point out that our nervous systems don't know the difference between something that's actually happening and something that's happening in our brain. So you described all this physical response to your thoughts, and that's 100% accurate. Your body is the more you relive a trauma, the more you tell yourself about your, you know, shame or whatever, the more your body is reacting to it. It doesn't know the difference. So yeah. What we feed our mind is literally like shaping our experience. And then, oh man, you said, so that was one thing. And then, how do you go from telling your higher self? So one very simple thing that I'm really developing this.
Yeah.
I'm figuring this out, but it seems to me what I'm noticing is that if I take a quiet moment, because all of our thoughts, they feel like they're right up here, right? They're like, yeah, up in the front in that animal brain part, like chatter, chatter. None of that is real. Anything that is based in fear is not real. That is not your higher self ever. Your higher self is not like running around worried about the future, you know? So anything that sounds like worry, fear, shame, any of that, all of that is not your higher self. You could rule those out off the top. Then there's this other thing where if you take a quiet moment, like I always, you tapped into something for me. I always have had trouble telling the difference between my intuition, hope, and fear. So am I afraid that I'm going to get in a car accident on this drive? Or is there an intuitive feeling that something's going to go wrong? Or am I hopeful that I'm going to get this job that I want? Or is there an intuitive feeling that I'm going to get it?
Yes.
And what I have found is that if you have to ask that question, it's probably your chitter chatter animal brain, not your higher self. Number one. And number two, if you really want to know, you take that quiet moment, get in a space of quiet where you're just aware of your breath. Tune in to your breath and ask the question that's on your mind. Should I go on this road trip? And the chatter emerges from here. For me, the higher self emerges. And I'm sorry, I motioned to my forehead for those listening. And for when I get the answer from my higher self, it emerges from the crown. Nice. It comes from a different place. And that might sound strange, but for me, this is what I've noticed.
No, I think
to pay attention to where the thought emerges from in your head.
Yes. I mean, but for me also, it's bigger than that. Yes, where you feel it in your head. Yes, that first sort of that kind of pressure behind the eyes kind of thought, that's usually the ego chatter chatter. The crown of the head, if it comes from the heart, if it comes from the gut, you know, if it comes from some, from somewhere, the heart and the gut usually, and the throat also holds your truth. But yes, it's somewhere else in your body rather than a kind of horrible, you know, scribbly mess in your head is where it comes from.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Because that horrible scribbly mess is running all the time. So we know that's not it. So if it sounds like that, if it feels like that, that's hope, fear, whatever. And one thing to backpedal too, you said something that made me remember that whenever you have those thoughts, those intrusive, negative, bullying thoughts, one thing that to always do is ask yourself, what am I afraid or ashamed of? Because almost always those thoughts emerge out of shame or fear. Your brain is going, wait a minute, we have to hold her back. She's about to do something brave. She's going to put us in danger. We're going to cease to exist if she does all these things that she's dreaming of. Like, no. Keep her small. What's going on? What am I afraid or ashamed of? Almost always emerges from those two things.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah. No, it's really fascinating. And I just want to bring it back to weight loss just for a minute. Mm-hmm. Because as you're speaking, I'm just sort of coming back to this idea that, you know, when we overeat, we are, you know, I'm trying to sort of think about when we overeat, we are fulfilling something in ourselves. This is how I've always thought about it, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. We are fulfilling something in ourselves. We are filling a lot of people say they overeat because they're filling a void. A lot of people say they overeat because they're eating their emotions because they haven't been able to, you know. And then there's also this sense of safety. You know, food lives energetically at the root chakra, at the base. And so when we eat a lot, I've heard it described that, you know, we eat too much so that we become more grounded, which seems crazy, but energetically it makes sense. You become heavier, you sit firmer, heavier on the earth, you're more grounded. And so combating those ideas, like if, you know, somebody's listening to this and they're like, yeah, this sounds like me, I'm in this kind of spiral of, I'm always thinking about, you know, what the next snack is going to be and making sure I've got something to eat with me and I've got something in the fridge when I get home and what have you. And it's the same for any addiction. It comes from a place of needing to feel safe. Is that your experience?
You really are in tune. You're so in tune with all this. I know you know that, but I want to appreciate that in this moment, because safety is a real issue for me. And I know you haven't had a chance to listen to The Easy Way Out, but one of the major things that I addressed was that I felt safe at 337 pounds. And that is why I sabotaged any efforts to lose weight. And in addition to those brain factors we talked about that were beyond my control, my body for the rest of my life is going to try to make me obese again. That is just a fact. So like, I just want to re-emerge, like no shame here, because the body is working against you. Once you have obesity, that's it. And you can manage it, but this is always a thing. It's always going to be a thing. I'll always have the disease of obesity. So that said, safety came at 337 pounds. I literally, you know, because of sexual trauma and other types of trauma, I felt safer. I felt, I might not get attention from men as much, which wasn't true. Of course, we know that's not true. Like, being overweight doesn't actually protect you from anything, but it felt that way physically. Like, my daughter and I, in the podcast, I have an episode where I talked with two of my adult children who struggle with their weight and were chubby as kids, about how I handled their weight as when they were children and how it feels now for me to try to lose weight. And it felt like I was turning my back on them, especially my baby girl, who's so beautiful and bright and amazing. And she looks just like me. And here I am, like, having surgery so that I can be skinny, you know. Just, I needed to talk that out with her.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we joked about is, like, I said, yeah, I mean, if you're trying to kidnap me into your van, like, all I have to do is drop dead weight. Good luck. And she goes, yeah, it's a two-man job. You know, like, it's physical safety in some ways. And, like, I was terrified to let go of that extra weight and be vulnerable to kidnappers, which is, like, the silliest, like, when you really think about that, it's kind of
crazy.
Irrational. Yeah. I mean,
really,
a heart attack was a much bigger threat to me than guys in a white van trying to kidnap me on the street, especially the way that I live my life. I'm not going anywhere past 8 p.m. Okay. Like, let's be real. So, you know, letting go of that sense of safety and actually dealing with that emotionally before I would not do the surgery until I figured that part out, because that part was so critical, I felt. This, and it's interesting because now on the other side of weight loss, now I'm a US size 8. I'm not in the obese category. I'm just barely overweight. I'm a really below average size now, but I'm a normal person, right? Like, and I feel safer now because I'm faster. So I found safety in my lightness, because I feel like I could outrun someone if I had to, you know, if my life depended on it, where before, maybe not. And then finding that safety when it comes to male attention, which is such, influences women so much. It's such a part of our experience and shapes who we are, like, trying to protect ourselves from, unfortunately, what's just become of that whole area of life.
Just gotta wait and hit your sort of mid-50s, and then you become miraculously invisible anyway. So it doesn't.
That's right. Well, I, you know, losing the weight, I've discovered that I've hit that age because I'm not interesting to them anymore anyway. And it's, you know, that's handy. But still finding a sense of your own power is so important, to say, like, I don't have to manage my body based on how people are going to react to it. My body is for me. And finding that power and your own source of, like, self-determination. Like, yes, accidents will happen. Yes, people do bad things. But for the most part, we know how to keep ourselves safe. And I really had to lean on that. And that was one of the episodes with the therapist. We worked all about this safety issue. It's such, and then, you know, another thing is I've lost 2 feet of girth from my hips. So imagine what that means for my personal space and being closer to other people. I'm much more vulnerable to the world. I'm much closer to people. When I hug, I'm heart to heart now. I can, like, actually feel a person's heart on my heart. You can feel it if you hug long enough, the beat is there, where before, not at all. I thought I gave the comfiest, coziest hugs, and I was afraid to give that up, but I've discovered something new about hugs that I didn't have. And that's what I found, is that all the things that I gave up to lose those, you know, almost 200 pounds, I've gained something on the other side that I didn't know was there, because fear was keeping me, because I knew that was safe. I had been safe enough at 337 pounds and I did not want to leave that safety. So yes, safety is a huge part. And in my energy healing work, which I sent you a couple of videos that I made about that, the safety has been a huge issue. The root chakra, like, discovering my safety in the world has been a huge part of my spiritual growth as well.
Yeah, in one of those videos, and I watched the link that you sent me, I watched, and it was part one of four. And I was like, I was running out of time, because we organized this really fast. I ran out of time to go and find parts 2, 3, and 4, which I really wanted to watch, because it was really touching. It was basically you connecting with your inner child and connecting with all of, you know, basically it was shame that you felt. And shame is one of the most insidious emotions that we can grant ourselves. It is the worst pernicious vicious of emotions. And so just for my gratification, how did you overcome that, getting rid of or dealing with the shame that you had?
This is why I say it's a mind, body, spirit thing. So first, I'm like, I'm a therapist, right? So I am all in on the emotional tools. I am figuring out the brain science, doing the emotional work. Then I'm doing all of this physical work, like letting go of the physical weight. And then with this energy healing session, you didn't get to watch the end of the story, but I'll tell you the plot twist. I'll tell you the short version of that story, yes. Which was that I'm doing this body work. I meet my shadow. I see the shadow that lives in everyone, the parts we want to ignore, the shame, the anger, the guilt, all of those so-called bad feelings that we deny and hide from. And I allow the light in, and I see that shadow dissipating and recognize that it can't live in the light. And then I'm laying on my back and I see a face hovering over my face. And this face is the most beautiful, glorious. We don't have words to describe the beauty of this face. It had light beaming from all points. It was hovering just over my face. And I was just in awe, like tears streaming down. I felt completely overwhelmed by how beautiful it was. And the light then wanted my permission to be a part of me, to come in. And the panic. I was like, no, I don't even feel worthy to be, I'm saying this out loud. I don't feel worthy of looking at this face, much less being a part of this light. Like, no way. Like, this house is not clean enough for you, period. And then I'll never forget this. This is the most impactful moment in my life. My guardian angel that was with me that showed me this turned around and showed me that I was looking in a mirror. The face was me. And I had no choice but to accept that that light is the reality of who I am and who you are and who every person on this planet is. And you can't see something like that and then keep moving the way you were moving before.
Yeah. That is so big. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's what a beautiful story. That's quite extraordinary and such, it's so touching, but it's so relatable. And everybody who hasn't had an experience like that knows that that is possible and knows. And as soon as you hear that, you go, it's so authentic. You know that that is the truth. And even if you've not experienced that situation, you know, that thing, I hope these people, everybody listening can actually, yeah, I recognize that is the truth, that I am the light. I am that.
Oh. That is why I keep talking. I keep making videos, even though no one watches. I have to spread this. I mean, how can you see something like that and then watch people suffering with shame and holding on to these things? We are love. We are light. We are the most glorious, beautiful beings. And we are in such torture in these human brains, and figuring it out, finding our way back to love is the point of life. And so I'm so thrilled to now be able to help people on that journey. And it does involve taking care of your body and taking care of the emotional space and taking care of your spiritual, like tending to the spiritual beings that we are. They can't just be neglected and us move forward just fine. One can't go without the other.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So Joy, tell everybody how they can find you, where they can find you, about your website, what you offer, all of that kind of stuff, so that people can reach out and get
sure. So I'm on, you know, all the social media. My handle is Dr. Joy Bracey, DrJoyBracey. And my podcast is The Easy Way Out, WEIGH. And that's on anywhere that you listen to podcasts. My website, drjoybracey.com. I put out videos every single day on self-love, spirituality, inner critic healing, mix in with this body positivity and weight loss stuff. And then also I do coaching and therapy for people who live in the state of Louisiana. But I'm here. I've been told I'm a shepherd. So that's what I'm here to do.
You know, I feel like there's always somebody out there for everybody. Everybody on a journey of self-development or self-improvement in any kind of facet of life, and rarely do it on their own. We all need somebody's hand to hold. We need to be led. And that's one of the biggest joys for those who can lead, because then once you've been through that journey, you can then lead and help others. But yeah, find that person that helps. And if Joy is that person, then I'm...
That's right.
Absolute. God, I was going to say Joy again, but it has been. It's been...
It is, though. Isn't it wonderful? I was named after my grandmother. I'm so lucky.
You are lucky. It's been absolutely gorgeous speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you too.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.